What has happened here was caused by a force which, up until a few days ago, was entirely beyond the scope of man's imagination.
Catapults of propaganda.
The truth is out there.
Some alien race to come down and threaten us.
The military industrial complex.
Yet unofficial government agencies. Take the red pill.
If this were a dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier.
Welcome to PID Radio. I'm Derek Gilbert.
And I am Sharon Gilbert, everybody, and welcome to our lovely bunker. We've got it. We've just got everything, and we even have... Dun-dun-dun-dun!
A wall of paranoia!
Now, mind you, it is blank at this. It's a tabula rasa.
Mm-hmm.
But I guarantee, before tomorrow night comes here in Middle Missouri, there will be many things written upon it.
Yes. And this is a smaller wall of paranoia than we had in the old bunker.
Wall of paranoia.
Yeah, which means we'll have to use small pens. But that's okay. That's okay. We're happy to have it, and we've got that, and we've got a new table in here. So we're getting things set back up to where they were before in the old bunker. Just, you know, more, cozy space.
We didn't realize how good the old bunker was.
No. Well, it's often the way it is in this life. You don't realize what you got till it's gone.
I know. Isn't that the truth? You know, and speaking of bunkers, I'm just wondering where in the world is Carmen Kim Jong-il? Well, I'll tell you what. Kim Jong-il really is. He's like the kid who cried wolf. He has cried nuclear mm-hmm. too many times. And I think essentially right now the world is just going yawn.
Yep.
Mark Foley's much more interesting,
mm-hmm.
which is sad because one of these days, Kim Jong-il, who runs a country that he presents himself as essentially being God. He came down from the clouds in the heavens.
Right.
And he sings, he roars and the birds sing or something like that. He's got some kind of weird little video that's on YouTube right now. He is, you know, he's been around for a while. Frankly, he is getting older.
Mm-hmm.
And I think he wants to make his place in history. He's head of a country that has no money.
Right.
They have practically no infrastructure. They really are very, very poor.
Yeah.
And he is beholden to China. So I think right now that may be the only thing that's kept him from doing anything. But if he does indeed have nuclear warheads that are capable of going onto a rocket,
mm-hmm.
I think he may well, just out of desperation, fire one off.
Yeah. It is about the only way he's going to leave a mark in history, sadly. Mm-hmm. He has... And it's possible. It's not outside the realm of possibility that the Chinese use him to test our defenses without getting their hands dirty. No plausible deniability. The way the Russians used to use the Bulgarian intelligence agencies, supposedly, to do dirty work that the KGB found distasteful.
Mm-hmm.
So it's his role to play, and he is celebrating 19 years now as head of the country's Workers' Party, plans are in place to detonate a bomb in what they're calling a 2,000 meter deep. That's roughly a mile and a half deep abandoned coal mine near the Chinese border.
Mm-hmm.
I presume he wouldn't do this without the approval of the Chinese. I mean, depending on how close to their border it is.
Oh, you wouldn't think so.
Yeah.
Well, we'll have to see what happens. I suspect in the next few days we're going to get more information as of today. This is, of course, Sunday evening, October the 8th. He has backed down.
Mm-hmm.
He hasn't personally backed down, but representatives of his government have said that, no, we don't plan on doing anything like that. We would like to meet, you know, one-on-one with representatives of the United States and talk, you know, about some things. But, oh, we don't plan on doing anything for a while. Could be months.
Mm-hmm.
Or could be never.
Tomorrow.
Or could be tomorrow, yes. Speaking of things that could be tomorrow, there are rumblings coming out of Syria.
Yes.
Assad is very seriously thinking about a preemptive strike.
That is a bold move, but when you consider the reasons given by Debco File, of course, Debco is the source of this information, it makes sense. They are just as aware of what's going on in the world as we are. We don't have secret sources.
Hmm. Well, we do.
Yeah, we just can't tell you about them. That's why they're secret. But they know that we've got two carrier strike groups that are sailing to the Middle East right now and are due to arrive in about 2 weeks' time.
Yes, and they also know that the Russians have now moved into Lebanon.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you what, these forces are not part of NATO.
No. This is a really interesting development. The Syrians and Iranians, you know, the reason they would consider a strike, and according to Debka, they're looking at trying to retake the Golan Heights from Israel,
mm-hmm.
is because they see Israel as kind of rocked back on its heels right mm-hmm. now. Israel found tougher resistance than they expected when they went into South Lebanon. Hezbollah gave them more of a fight than they expected. And there are some political fallout from that inside Israel between the parties. You know, is Olmert really competent to lead the nation, mm-hmm. especially in a crisis? So with Israel kind of back on its heels and the U.S. not having its pieces in place yet in the Persian Gulf, now would be the time to strike. And if they strike against Israel, then the U.S. is faced with a choice. What do we do? Do we mm-hmm. attack Iran or do we go to Israel's aid first? So there's that to consider. But the other factor here that Sharon mentioned is that Russia has deployed commandos of Muslim descent.
Exactly. They were in Chechnya, and right. they are well known to be Muslim sympathizers and led by Muslim leaders.
Right. And they are now on the ground in South Lebanon, and as Sharon said, they are not part of the UNIFIL contingent that's there to keep the peace, which is a joke because Hezbollah has already reclaimed areas that they abandoned during the attack
right.
and have declared them off-limits military zones.
Right. Now, let's remember, too, that we were there, we being the United States, NATO, we were there in the 80s, supposedly rebuilding Lebanon.
Mm-hmm.
And things just didn't get rebuilt. We ended up involved in the Iran-Contra affair.
Right. Drug running out of the Bekaa Valley.
Exactly. And speaking of the Bekaa Valley, from what I understand, that is a very important ground. You know, it's I think it's just north of the Golan Heights,
mm-hmm.
that area. But eastern Lebanon.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm picturing it correctly in my mind, it would be a very important staging area if you're going to be at war with Israel.
Yeah. It's a very profitable area because the Bekaa Valley is where the heroin poppies, the opium poppies have been grown.
Very, very fertile area. So you want to own that. And it's sad that they're not feeding their people from the Bekaa Valley. They're lining their pockets.
Yeah, it's a cash crop. And it has been – there is some evidence to indicate that the Syrians have been running the drug trade out of Lebanon's Bekaa Valley for a long, long time. And in fact, mm-hmm. that it was the imminent disclosure of the U.S.-Syrian connection in running those drugs that led to the shooting down or the destruction of TWA,
the
Pan Am flight, yeah, over Lockerbie, Scotland. There were two members of the DEA, two agents from the DEA that were coming back to the U.S. from their base in Cyprus with mm-hmm. information about this connection between the U.S. intelligence services and Syrian intelligence
mm-hmm.
who were collaborating and running drugs through Germany on this particular flight. This was a regular courier flight.
In fact, this story connects in with another news article that was posted to Watcher this week, and that's Susan Lindauer
right.
is out and talking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that was one of the kind of the direction we were leading. It all ties together, and this is why we're so happy to get that wall of paranoia here so we can start drawing circles and names and lines. And
then, you know, they all come into me in the middle.
Yeah, me in the middle. Susan Lindauer, and you remember we talked with J.B. Smith about her situation, and also Janet Phelan, who made us aware of Susan Lindauer's case in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
She has finally been released. A judge in New York finally determined that the government had no reason to hold her against her will and try to medicate her against her will in order to make sure that she was competent to stand trial. There was no evidence that medicating her would make her any more competent to stand trial. Let's put it that way. Kind of a horrifying situation when you think about it, that the government could lock you up and say, well, you're not competent to stand trial, but if you just let us give you these meds,
mm-hmm.
these drugs, then we think
you'll be better. In a military
facility.
I mean, down in Texas, she was in a military facility.
So Greg Szymanski has an article about that case, and kudos to Greg Szymanski for doing a really good job in following this case and interviewing Janet Phelan and Jay Smith and Susan Lindauer now on his radio program. And they're writing about it at his news site, which is arcticbeacon.com. So she is now out and free, and that's good news. Jay Smith has been Jay Fields has been following this and blogging at his blog.
Yeah, we've interviewed Jay a couple of times, so we'll put links to those show notes, those shows, just in case you have not yet heard them, or if you want to listen to them again.
It just shows, as many cases throughout history have shown, that those who tell the truth are often doing so at the risk of their own lives. There's a case coming from Moscow where a journalist named Anna Politkovskaya,
mm-hmm.
Politkovskaya, who was a critic of the war in Chechnya, was found shot to death at her apartment block in Moscow. She is a mother of two and had written numerous times about rights abuses by Russian troops. And
apparently CCTV in her building has sort of grainy footage of a man following her into the elevator. She was shot in. There are various versions of the story, but I think the one that I got at Moss News, mm-hmm. saw at Moss News, was that she'd been shot once in the head and three times in the body.
Yeah.
This man followed her in there. It was an assassination. I mean, yeah. Clear and simple. It wasn't a mugging or anything like that.
Mm-hmm. And while we don't see things like that happening often over here in the U.S., one has to wonder about the case like that of the San Jose Mercury News reporter, whose name escapes me at the moment, but the fellow whose death was declared a suicide with two gunshot wounds to a head,
mm-hmm.
to the head.
Oh, I know. Well, I mean, he was Danny Casolaro.
And Danny Casolaro, right.
In a tub with his wrist slashed and the door not in any way locked or, you know, bolted the way you would if you wanted some privacy, and no hesitation marks and just all sorts of questions around his death. I mean, sadly, there are people who have stood up for the truth and their life has been forfeit. And that will take me into a story that I would like to talk about, because we've had the spinach E. coli story in the news for a couple of weeks now. And you told me just a little while ago that now there are bans. Is it actual bans on milk
lettuce? I would have to read more about the milk, but there was recalls on lettuce. That was just something that popped up. That was just on Drudge Report tonight. That's new.
Well, Escherichia coli is a bacteria that is just naturally in your gut, to be honest with you. And it's also in cows' guts and things like that. And the truth is that whenever you have certain processes and you cure meat and things like that, that there are times that you get that bacterium in there. But if you cook it properly, you're not generally going to have to worry about it. You don't expect to find it on your spinach. So you have to ask yourself, how did that end up on there? Well, that may be organic farming, because they don't use liquid fertilizer, you know, which is a chemical produced by man. They use manure, to be mm-hmm. honest with you. And that's what our grandfathers and our great-grandfathers used, and they had great crops. But you have to ask yourself, how did all of this spinach, which has been washed and gone through all this processing, mm-hmm. how did so much of it throughout the country,
right,
21, 22 states, something like that,
mm-hmm. two deaths
get
now
affected? Well, I found a story, a news article that, it was not a news article. It was a study. It was an abstract. And it was not the only one. I found a number of them that talk about Fort Detrick and aerosolized E. coli.
Aerosolized
means that, and it was trying to figure out the best way to take freeze-dried E. coli
mm-hmm.
and rehydrate it for aerosolization. In other words, spray from a plane if you choose to.
Mm-hmm.
In some way, spraying it.
Now, this raises an interesting question. Why would the U.S. Army at Fort Detrick be researching ways to spread a dangerous
Let me give you the official
strain.
Line,
mm-hmm.
and that would be, we have to think like our enemies.
Mm-hmm.
We have to try to imagine what the enemy would do to us. and figure out ways to prevent that. Mm-hmm. Now, I think to a certain extent that probably is true.
Sure.
I mean, that's just sadly the way the world works. All too often, though, I think that there is a money factor that sneaks in there. Mm-hmm. And if, let's say, person A owns a huge pharmaceutical company and has a friend who does research into biowarfare, he might say to his friend, well, you know, I could probably come up with a vaccine for that with your help, and we could work together, and we could figure out a way to vaccinate our troops against that, and if it ever happens over here, we'll have that all set. And suddenly you have money-making to figure out how the enemy would do it, and mm-hmm. money-making to figure out ways to prevent it and or fight it.
And let's be honest, it's a very small circle, the group of people
who are competent
and educated at that level.
Who founded Fort Detrick?
Who founded Fort Detrick?
Merck.
Merck.
Hmm, he's the one who gave up all the money to George Merck. George? Anyway, Merck. Yeah, the founder.
Gee, how interesting.
I know. Well, it makes you think. Well, E. coli is not the only thing that's being aerosolized, being looked into. Mm-hmm. It's some other really nasty things like tularemia.
Which is rabbit fever, yeah.
Chikungunya.
Chikungunya. And there was a case at Fort Detrick, I don't remember exactly the date, but it's been within the last 10 years of a researcher being infected by
Oh, there were a number Ebola. Of those. Yes, there were a number of those that took place.
And the same thing took place at a Russian research laboratory called Vector, in which a Russian researcher was stuck with an Ebola-laced needle.
Mm-hmm.
The American public, I think, would be shocked and horrified to realize that our government is researching and developing these weapons in the interest of defending against them, of course.
Oh, of course. Well, there's this, if you do a search on Google and put in chikungunya, or just put in Neil Levitt, N-E-I-L-L-E-V-I-T-T. Mm-hmm. You'll find stories where he worked, and it's documented. I have found his name on lots of abstracts. He really did work at Fort Detrick. And he came out as a whistleblower a few years back because he had been working with chikungunya virus. And mm-hmm. his department was trying to find a vaccine for it.
Mm-hmm.
So they were injecting live virus into mammals, and I think even to some humans. Now, I'd have to read this article again. But what he was discovering was it actually made it worse and more communicable.
The virus has mutated.
It mutated, very much so. Now, let me go to a story that just came out,
mm-hmm.
and that is that researchers here in the United States have learned that the virus over in Indian Ocean right now, which has killed close to 100 people as of yesterday,
mm-hmm.
not supposed to be fatal, is a different virus, a different strain. It's genetically different from the African version.
Right.
Can we connect A to B to C?
Yeah. This is why we wear the tinfoil hats, folks. We look for these connections here and just speculate. We did the same thing and asked the same questions about the outbreak of the Marburg virus in Angola
mm-hmm.
about a year and a half ago. Why was it? Was it a coincidence that the outbreak of Marburg in Angola followed an immunization program by the World Health Organization? The residents didn't seem to think mm-hmm. so. They were throwing rocks at the UN doctors that came in. Now, the World Health Organization has...
they've just arrived in Kerala,
just arrived in India, which is... And Kerala is the city, which is the hub, the ground zero, really, of this outbreak.
Mm-hmm.
But according to what I've read, it's affecting like 119 sectors inside India and is spreading rapidly. And the CDC has noted that there are some passengers who are returning to the United States with symptoms that appear to be consistent with chikungunya.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, that's how we found out over here.
Mm-hmm.
It's researchers over here who have taken a look at passengers who've come back.
Right.
And they've looked at the virus in these people
mm-hmm.
and found that that virus is different from what was in Africa. And I have to ask, okay, how close is it to what was at Fort Detrick?
Yeah. if it's as close as the anthrax was that turned up in the offices of Senators Daschle and Leahy.
Yeah, the Ames strain.
Right. It really makes you wonder what is going on at Fort Detrick. And again, why is our government playing around with these substances, these bioweapons? There was a case last year where a storage facility in eastern Kentucky reported a leak of sarin gas from aging rockets that are being stored there. Like, wait a minute. What are we doing to get rockets filled with sarin gas?
Well, what was the gas that was being stored in Indiana that they were having to...
Mustard? Mustard gas? Was it not?
Mustard gas? It was something else, I think.
Or VX.
VX. It was VX that was there.
Which is the substance that was used in that deadly subway attack in Tokyo by the Aum Shiriko cult a few years back. What are we doing with these substances here in the United States?
Isn't VX the one that was in The Rock?
Yes. VX was the, if you remember seeing the movie The Rock with, that we've talked about because of all the symbolism there with John Mason and Stanley
Goodspeed.
Yeah. The substance there that the, that Ed Harris, the general, was going to fire into San Francisco was VX. Deadly, extremely deadly. And yet we've got rockets with shells, warheads filled with this stuff that are in storage. Why?
Now, let's just take one more little step over here, just to jump to the left. And you'll find on Sci-Fi and also on CBS, if you take a look at the series Jericho, we see apocalyptic television and movies are all the rage. Sci-Fi has now shown, what's the name of the movie again? The Day After.
The Day After, starring Jason Robards, Steve Guttenberg.
It's a really good movie, but they've shown it three or four times in the last 10 days.
And it makes you wonder. I mean, the movie came out in 1983, so why 23 years later is it getting shown twice in a week and a half?
I guess I could say it's because Jericho is out and they're trying to play off that. But you know, with October 13th coming up, it's a Friday. It's also, as we said last week and the week before, I don't know, but it is the day that the Templars were rounded up by Philip the Fair in 1307. This is the 699th anniversary. That's a hidden 666.
Good point. Good point. As we look for these hidden connections here and try to figure out what in this world is going on.
You had a dream last night.
I had a really bizarre dream. And, you know, I think it's the St. John's wort been taking the last couple of nights. I had a strange dream the night before, too. But had an odd dream that Sharon and I were called upon to investigate the disappearances of children, and that in the course of investigating and trying to find out what was going on, we discovered that at every home at which a child had disappeared, and these were very young children, age two and under, infants, there was a hole, sometimes outside, hidden under a barrel or a basket or something, about 2 foot around, or in some cases, inside the home, in which floorboards had been removed, you know, in a closet or something. And finally, in one of these homes, the hole was, you know, was out in the middle of the floor. It was like, you know, not even trying to hide it anymore. And I looked inside this hole with a flashlight, and I saw this a hideous creature, hairless, small, oversized head. Looked a little like Stewie Griffin from Family Guy. A little, except with really sharp, pointy teeth. And he was sitting and tapping away at a computer, which made no sense.
But, it did to me, and I'll tell you in a minute.
Okay, but we were able to determine that we were not dealing with a physical enemy here. You know, we're not talking about naked mole rats or chuds or anything like that. It was a supernatural entity, and so we did battle against it the way Russ Dizdar would do it. You know, basically called upon the power of Jesus Christ to banish it from the home and to make it release the child, and it did. And then it went back to typing away on its computer. And of course, I was curious, and I asked, "What are you doing?" I'm writing a commentary on 2 Jude. Well, if you read the New Testament, you know that there is only one epistle attributed to Jude, one book of Jude. And I said so. And the thing just looked up at me and said, "Shows what you know." Like, oh. And then I stopped and I thought about it for a second and wondered whether I should ask to read this second letter of Jude. And then, of course, it dawned on me that how could I trust this thing? So, so basically you said, you know, be in the name of Jesus Christ, be gone and get out of here. And then I woke up. But it was really weird, just very distinct image, very striking image that stayed with me after I woke up, looking down into this pit and seeing this thing there tapping away on a computer keyboard, writing a commentary on a non-existent book of the Bible.
Well, I'll say a couple of things. One of them I said to you after you told me the dream this morning, and that is that the first thing I thought of when you were telling me the dream was the connection that almost every home has to the internet, and that the enemy does use the internet to lure our children away, to steal them from us, to put them into danger and sometimes literally take them to death, depending on what it is they're drawn into. If you look at the kids who are drawn into the goth culture, they live on the internet. There are even some, as you have told me, this was brand new to me when you told me about it, sites like SecondLife.com, where you can literally go and live a virtual life.
Yeah. And we've seen some ads on TV for a game that was about featured the voices of like two 10 or 12 year old boys kind of laughing and giggling about how they got to live this virtual life, you know, with all unlimited money and cars and stuff. And that was bad enough. It just seemed like a PC game or an Xbox game or something. Mm-hmm. But Second Life is something that was started up, I guess, about 6 years ago and is really caught on in recent months. And it is a free, it's like MySpace, but taken to the nth degree. Mm-hmm. It's a virtual 3D world. You need a pretty high-powered computer to run the program in order to access it. But you basically create a 3D avatar of yourself, and you go into this virtual world, meet people, interact with people.
And you buy money. You buy lindens. For a dollar, you get, I think, 5 lindens or something like that. Maybe it's more.
Linden being the name of the company that developed this game.
And Linden, of course, being the currency because it's the name of the company. Mm-hmm. But that's the currency there. You can buy real estate once you have lindens. You can buy merchandise. You can buy. There's a guy sells roller skates, and he's really proud of them. You can change the color of your roller skates. You can buy clothes. Mm-hmm. You can buy furniture for your house. You can buy a house to put on your property.
There are people in this game that that sell avatars. Mm-hmm. They will create clothing and outfits or, you know, whole bodies for your avatar. And even corporations are getting involved in this now. Wells Fargo has opened a virtual space inside Second Life. You can't do any banking there yet, but that's coming.
That it will come.
There are other companies in there that are looking into opening virtual spaces inside Second Life,
like
Walmart.
You can make phone calls to real phones.
Mm-hmm. It's a virtual. It's like the Matrix.
Mm-hmm.
It's like the Matrix. It's
pretty
like,
soon, just plug me in and, you know, just put me in some goo so I get the nutrients I
need. All that really matters is what my brain is doing. It doesn't really matter that I'm physically interacting with people. It only, you know, actually matters that I'm out there in the virtual world. And that's a direction that we're going. And it's very easy, I think, for people to find that kind of virtual world very appealing and to get sucked into it.
Mm-hmm.
Because as appealing as MySpace is, and, you know, MySpace is huge, and then there are other sites that are like it. In fact, there's one for Christians, XIANZ.com, Xians or Christians.com. As appealing as those sites are, this just takes it even further because, again, you've got that illusion of a of really interacting with other people. You can go and chat and talk with them. Little word bubbles pop up. You probably will have an option at some point to plug in a headset like we're wearing now and use those to actually talk to other people in this world. And again, if corporate America is beginning to see that this is a potential moneymaker, we have to sit up and take notice and see that there is something here that is catching a wave, and a lot of people are looking to ride this. According to what I saw on their site today, there are almost 1 million people registered with this SecondLife.com.
Oh, and lots of money. It was something like $500,000 U.S. Was spent last week.
$500,000? Real dollars.
Real dollars.
Not Linden.
No, not Linden's.
$500,000 real dollars.
In U.S. dollars.
Wow. Wow. And, The implications of this are mind-boggling. I mean, this is like something from a science fiction movie.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it does bring to mind the Matrix.
That's the direction we're going. And what I find really disturbing is that what is it about real life that is so unsatisfactory to teenagers.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes me back to your dream. The enemy knows that it's what's in our minds that matters. And so the internet is a perfect playground.
Mm-hmm.
It used to be when, you know, I grew up in the 60s and 70s, and it was the drug culture.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, kids these days still do drugs, sadly. They still smoke and they still drink and things like that. But the internet is also a drug in some ways.
Yes, it is.
You can get a real high in a virtual community.
Yeah. In fact, in this virtual community, there are special areas that are restricted to people over the age of 21.
Yeah, but how do they know how old you are?
Huh? Well, exactly. They don't.
Exactly. They don't.
And you can go into those areas and engage in behavior that, an adult, and I put that in quoting marks because that's not really an accurate description, of an adult nature.
Yeah.
And there are certain chemicals released in the brain at that point, too.
That's just it. I think it's not just that our imagination is going somewhere. When I talk about the addiction of the internet experience, it leads to chemicals that are produced when you do certain behaviors.
Right. Mm-hmm. Some of which
behaviors are shooting other human beings, and somehow you get an adrenaline high
mm-hmm.
off of doing that, then the day's going to come that you want to go past just the virtual experience. High.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what sort of effect this has on culture and how big this gets. I want to get a hold of a psychologist I talked with at MU here who has done a study on the effects of pro-anorexia and pro-bulimia websites on young teens and ask her if she's checked this out and whether anyone has done any work on the effect of this sort of virtual world.
Mm-hmm.
Think about the game The Sims, very popular PC game. This is like The Sims, but interconnected with a million people,
mm-hmm.
and you all interact with one another. You're not interacting with computer players. You're interacting with other live players all over the world. That's what this Second Life is like.
I looked at the site a few minutes ago, and it said that there were 5,000 people online at that moment.
Mm-hmm.
This is early in the game.
It really is. And it came to my attention a couple of weeks ago, but I didn't really understand what I was looking at. Singer-songwriter Jonathan Colton, who is brilliant and is connected to Popular Science Magazine as their contributing troubadour, and host of their podcast, did a concert in Second Life for people who were in the game. And they could go and attend in their avatar form.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently it was a big success. They've got screen captures of how the concert came off at the Popular Science website. But I didn't really realize what I was looking at until I stumbled on something about it again today and began to think about the implications of this, of playing a simulated world and getting lost in these virtual interactions
mm-hmm.
instead of being a part of the family that I'm here to serve mm-hmm. as the father and husband of in this reality.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
meat space. It's not cyberspace. This is meat space.
look at the way teens interact now. You and I don't hang around them as much as we did before we moved here.
Right.
But, you know, when we were back in St. Louis, we had the pleasure of being around high school kids mm-hmm. quite a bit. And
right.
I loved it. But what I found really interesting is how often they text each other. They could be in the same room and they text message each other.
Mm-hmm.
They could be sitting next to each other and text message each other,
mm-hmm.
which means that they are somehow getting, something out of a virtual communication that they wouldn't get out of face-to-face.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that just little insight into what it must be like to be 16 or 17 years old or even younger. I mean, these kids are starting, they're kids that are 5 that have cell phones.
Yeah, yeah.
And kids that are 3 that buy stuff on eBay.
I just wonder if this Second Life isn't like the CB radio craze. You remember back in the 70s when CBs were all the rage and everybody was getting on the CB and talking to friends and you could be anonymous and make yourself relatively you know, portray yourself on the radio as something other than what you are, which you can do now on the internet through chat rooms and.
Yeah, but I think it takes one step further. You can create your own. You can have a store. You can sell things. If you always wanted to have a gun shop, you can sell your own guns.
Mm-hmm.
If you wanted to have a mansion, you can. If you want to pay enough lendings for it, you can buy some property and put a nice house on there. And,
right.
And give yourself, you know, make yourself look like, you know, I don't know, the coolest guy on the block.
Yeah, again, it's playing The Sims, but there's no goal. You don't win the game. The whole purpose of the game is to be in that virtual world, interacting with other people in this virtual world.
Right.
There's no real purpose to it except to draw you away from your mundane meat space existence. And I'm not, you know, I just think that's really...
M-E-E-T or M-E-A-T?
M-E-A-T.
So I was just thinking of Zim, because in Zim, you and I like the Invader Zim.
Right.
And everything is meat.
Yeah, yeah, they use that reference a lot.
Yeah.
But this is a reference to the transhumanist movement, which we've talked to Tom Horn about. There are, and the Collins brothers have talked about this too, that our existence now... How is it put? And I forget who said this. And Philip and Paul, if you're listening, they quote a man who said that our current physical condition was simply nature's first attempt at processing with meat. That chips are the future. Computer chips are the future. Our current existence is nature's first attempt at processing with meat.
Mm-hmm.
So cyberspace is the future. Meat space is.
Which brings us to the next thing I want to talk about. Battlestar Galactica. If you have not watched, I'm not talking about the one from the 80s.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about that
one. The cheesy one, yeah.
Well, at the time, it was really cool. I mean, now it was
Sorry, I'm confusing it with Buck Rogers with the little robot that went, weedy, weedy, weedy.
Well, there was,
That was cheesy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, the Lorne Greene, best death ever. Comic book guy on The Simpsons. No, Battlestar Galactica that is currently on Sci-Fi, I have to tell you, it's done extremely well.
Yes.
I wasn't watching it at all until you started watching it last year. And there were a couple of episodes that you said, boy, this is... And you started watching it, and then I thought, okay, well, I'll watch a little bit of it. Well, all summer long, practically, there have been ads for the first, you know, in the new season. And I just, you know, I was finally like, shut up with this ad. I'm so tired of seeing it. Well, we watched it the other night. I also watched a one-hour special, which actually was available and I think still is available on demand on our digital cable here in Columbia. If you have it for Sci-Fi and you can download it for free like I did, watch it while it's still available. It's the story so far for Battlestar Galactica, and it'll catch you up, relatively speaking. It's kind of hard to watch, what, five seasons or something in an hour?
Yeah.
But essentially, it's... sort of like the Terminator story, in that they're battling a silicon-based life form.
The Cylons.
Right. And that was true in the 80s. But the Cylons now have the capability of looking like humans, except that they only have 12 models. And so there are lots of each of the models.
Right.
And they are in the process of trying to, they being the Cylons, trying to figure out a way to hybridize between the human and the Cylons.
Right. They are trying to bring God to the unsaved human race.
And let me tell you, because the Cylons worship one God.
A monotheistic.
A male God.
Right.
And the nice Galactica humans worship a pantheon of 12 gods that correspond to the 12 houses of the zodiac.
There's a lot of symbolism here, and you can see it in the way some of the characters are named, like Commander Adama, Adam.
Adam.
Yeah. And there's a lot of that goes all the way through the characters, especially the human characters. But that is the key. The humans, the nice, sympathetic heroes of the storyline are pantheistic in their beliefs, following an ancient prophecy delivered by an oracle to the president, whose name, incidentally, was Roslyn, as in Roslyn Chapel, mm-hmm. as in possibly the location of the Holy Grail.
Mm-hmm.
The Cylons, in fact, there's one scene, possibly the creepiest Cylon of all, who sits down to eat dinner with his captured female slave, basically, mm-hmm. and begins to pray over the meal, "Oh, Heavenly Father."
Mm-hmm.
So the scary thing is that this is so well done and compelling. It's tight writing. It's mm-hmm. wonderfully directed, very cinematic in its direction, and it's going to lure a lot of people in. And again, the subtle message there that these monotheistic worshipers of a male mm-hmm. God are not to be trusted mm-hmm. because they're
and they are looking for
fanatical.
They're looking yeah. for the legendary place
home
called
planet.
Earth.
Yeah.
And they had to go a bunch of tasks finding Athena's arrow or something like that.
Something like that, yeah.
And by finding that, they found a map that looked, it was a 3D, almost like Stonehenge. Mm-hmm. And each stone pillar had what looked like, constellation on it.
Mm-hmm.
And that represented one of the 12 houses. Now, you've heard us talk with David Flynn and perhaps some others, maybe Tom Horn, about the ecliptic that goes around the Earth.
Mm-hmm.
The band of stars that go around the middle of our Earth that are called the Maseroth or Leviathan.
Mm-hmm.
And how we're approaching the end of the age.
Yep, December 21st, 2012.
Exactly, when the constellation Sagittarius Orion, which the Egyptians, Osiris,
mm-hmm. right,
comes out of the mouth of Leviathan, and I think that there's a lot of symbolism in Battlestar Galactica that relates to all of that. And. And what I find really disturbing is this notion that they worship this pantheon
mm-hmm.
and that the evil people worship a male
yep.
god, one god. And it's very Gnostic, along with Stargate, which
right.
is also
mm-hmm.
on Sci-Fi right now. And I don't know if it's been picked up again. I heard they were canceled, but they were looking for the Holy Grail, which you mentioned a few minutes ago.
Right.
The Sangreal.
Yeah. And that the aliens that were there, made up their complement of villains and allies in Stargate SG-1 corresponded to the ancient gods worshipped by various people groups in history, the Norse gods, the Egyptian gods, and so on. Even the Canaanites were, and ancient Middle Eastern gods were represented to some degree. One of the villains that they were dealing with in the most recent episodes was Baal.
Mm-hmm.
They call him Baal, but Baal. It's interesting how they just, again, selling this message that this is just a bunch of, well, it's either fiction and it's all untrue, or it sells the idea that Zechariah Sitchin was right, and that all of these mm-hmm. people, that these ancient gods that were worshipped by people thousands of years ago were actually space aliens.
Mm-hmm. We're being sold that bill of goods over
right.
and over. There are several different stories, but they boil down to the fact that we were not created by Jehovah God, mm-hmm. as you and I believe. That we, at the very least, were altered genetically by space travelers. But more than likely, we just sort of were put here by space travelers.
Mm-hmm.
That colonized our planet.
Yeah, and tinkered with monkey DNA because they needed slaves.
Yeah.
So, it's amazing how much symbolism and how many messages you can spot in popular entertainment mm-hmm. when you really start looking for
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I've been writing a series on it. I'm going to write part two of that series coming up here the next week or so. So many things to write, but, one more thing. You were talking about your dream earlier, and I said there were two things mm-hmm. that I thought of. One, of course, being the internet. The other one was related to darkness that I'm finishing up right now.
Mm-hmm.
There's a character called Possum, which is a demon that's very much like what you described.
Hmm.
And does go in and steal kids.
Interesting. Does he have internet access?
I don't know. Probably.
Yeah. Well, we'll look forward to that. And by the way, a thank you to people who have picked up Sharon's follow-up to Winds of Evil.
Thank you very much. We appreciate
it. Signs
that.
And Wonders.
It helps to keep us going because all of the, you know, all the money that we get, and you know, we make a modest little profit, very modest, but we do make a little profit on each book sold, and we do it through Lulu.com because it's an easy way to do it. We were able to self-publish that way.
Mm-hmm.
But all of that goes back into keeping us on the air and on the internet.
Yeah, and some of it goes to Thailand Missions.
We send 10% of everything that we get in.
Yeah, because
everything we make on those books, 10% goes right.
Pat and Deb
right
Wheeler are doing some yeoman's work over there in a part of the world where kids are often disposed of.
Mm-hmm.
And that happens all over the world, but they're, you know, they found themselves led to this spot in Thailand, and they've made the most of it, and they're really you know, showing some children that they are loved even if their birth parents were no longer able to care for them.
Yeah, you know, and with the political climate in Thailand right now, we really need to keep them in prayer because of the coup that happened last month in Thailand. It's hard to say what's going to happen over mm-hmm. the next few weeks and months.
Let's talk a little bit more religion and theology. There's some things this week that were interesting that popped up that deal with theology, notably the Vatican. Pope Benedict has issued an edict that formally abolishes the concept of limbo for Roman Catholics.
We're not talking about the party game.
No.
They can still play the party game.
Concept of limbo was a belief which, as I understand it, was a place of rest where the souls of those who just died before Christ were detained.
Well, yeah, and I think it also especially applied to unbaptized babies.
And it specifically, yes, it applied to unbaptized children, which kind of got around their dictate that children had to be baptized in order to go to heaven.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's not a belief that is held just by Roman Catholics. The real strict Lutherans would also believe that children must be baptized for the Holy Spirit to enter them and to allow them then to go to heaven, which raises the question, especially in parts of the world where the rate of stillborn children is very high, like Africa, mm-hmm. what happens then to children that are stillborn? How do you tell a grieving parent whose child was either stillborn or died within hours of birth, that it is now either in limbo forever or mm-hmm. in hell?
Mm-hmm. I know. Well, Benedict said that he has never believed in that.
Right.
And I guess that's where I have a problem with the Catholic Church. If the dictates, the papal bulls or edicts or whatever they're called, if those are really the representation of God's will on earth, how can they be alterable? How can they be fallible?
And the fact is that the concept, the doctrine of limbo, only came into the Roman Catholic Catechism around the 13th century anyway. So this is actually a step back to pre-13th century teachings. However, according to the sources at the Vatican, the Pope is only expected to abolish limbo for infants. So the precise status of limbo for people who died before Jesus is still in limbo. Yeah.
Knew that was coming.
I waited all day for that. Exorcists in Ireland say that they need to create a special forum in order to teach people a deeper understanding of the paranormal world. Roman Catholic exorcists in both the Catholic Church and the Church of Ireland want to set this forum up in order to learn more about spooky goings-on in Ireland, which is, as we know, a nation that has a very long history of belief in the paranormal.
Oh, yeah. I was raised half Irish, so lots of ghosts in my background.
Mm-hmm. The men behind this are the Father Pat Collins and Reverend William Lendrum, who between them have carried out hundreds of exorcisms in Ireland, including one of a 10-year-old boy who became possessed after using a Ouija board.
Mm-hmm.
But as we talked about the entertainment industry recently, this is an area which is being sold to consumers big time. You know, Most Haunted, Ghost Hunters. You know, you find programs on the paranormal on the History Channel, on the National Geographic Channel, and I frankly fail to see the connections there. But people are watching it, or they wouldn't be producing this stuff. There is a fascination with the paranormal, and while we disagree with some of the basic doctrines of the Roman Catholic Church, it is good to see that there are churchmen who understand that we need to teach people, Christians, that there is a paranormal world out there, and by definition, as a Christian, you believe in it. Now, let's try to understand it so that we're not messing around with it in ways that can hurt us.
And it's not your great Aunt Maud.
Right. The spirit that you think you see or that you may see is not the spirit of a departed ancestor or loved one.
Right.
Yeah, it is a disembodied spirit of the enemy side, and you don't mess around with it, basically.
Mm-hmm. No, and sadly, we don't have just those shows, you know, the reality-based shows, but we also have these fictional shows, these television drama 1 hour, half an hour, whatever they are, that center around the supernatural and this desire to be more than human.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the transhuman movement again. Kyle XY is one that we've talked about a couple
Kyle
times.
Kyle XY, there's a new one called Heroes, and Heroes? I watched an episode of that the other two episodes. And you can now download these things. You can download Heroes and Jericho and some others on iTunes. If you have the capability of doing so on your computer, for $1.99, you can watch it again and again and share it among five computers in your house if you have more than one. And it gives an opportunity to really take a look at what we are being sold and what we are being taught about transhumanism and the next step, the evolutionary leap, because in Heroes, for instance, there are people all over the world who suddenly wake up and realize they have powers, as if somehow, I read a short story years ago that I thought was wonderful, and it was this notion that the Earth, as it goes through, you know, the space and time, that it was going through a particle field that was actually suppressing the human brain. And as it got to out of the field, people started to get smart. And so people were getting all of these, you know, gifts and things that were happening. And there is a Dogon theory, a belief, I shouldn't say theory, a Dogon belief that in the last days, in the end of the age, that the great Sirius stars, that the trinary star system, that the third star, I think it is, but one of the stars would start to spin and would give off these particles that would shower the Earth. And only those who were capable of living through the shower would be able to make it through this test. And those who made it through would be brand new type of human.
It's, and you can dismiss, you know, a lot of these messages as they're portrayed fictionally on television and in movies as just storytelling. But the fact is that it's easier to sell a message like that in a fictional setting than if you were to put this forth in a non-fictional setting and go to try to preach the message.
Right.
Which is partly why we chose fiction as the way to sell our messages. Blah-ha-ha. But again, just to reiterate, that, you know, to underscore the point, this weekend at Penn State University, UnivCon, the world's largest, nation's largest paranormal conference, they're expected to have 1,200 people there this weekend talking about hauntings and paranormal investigations.
Well, it's an appropriate weekend, October the 13th, 14th, 13th, of course, you know, what is it called, Triskaidekaphobia or
right,
something like that.
Fear of number 13, yep.
And also the day that, you know, the Templars and... And we just finished having, if you missed it over the weekend, don't think you're going to be able to see it again for another year, but we had the Harvest Moon, which is the first full moon in October, or first full moon after the autumnal equinox. Mm-hmm. It's closest to the Earth, so you get this huge full moon.
Right.
And there's a lot of occult power associated with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you can't dismiss it. There are those out there who really believe it and try to harness it for their own purposes. Mm-hmm. And
even if it's only because they believe it that they do it. But I think there's more to it. You and I simply don't understand the world the way the fallen angels do.
No.
Or the way the unfallen angels do.
Right.
And they don't understand it the way God the Father does. So there's a whole lot more to our world than we can see and perceive.
Well, things we'll be watching in the week ahead, obviously the Middle East, the situation there with Russia having Muslim commandos on the ground in South Lebanon and Israel's border is interesting. And there appears to be some infighting going on in Gaza and the West Bank as Hamas and Fatah struggle and fight it out between themselves for control over what's happening in the Palestinian territories.
Let's not forget about the school shootings that we've had over the last couple of weeks. We've had a lot of incidents of school lockdowns also where there were not in the state of Iowa there in Des Moines, West Des Moines, there were seven schools that were locked down because a fugitive was on the loose. I really think that these are opportunities to ingrain in the minds of parents, we own your kids. We own your kids because we'll protect your kids.
Yeah.
And Bush just came out with a promise. We're going to get in there and we are going to protect your kids. Which means that we're going to restrict your access to them. Because the way it works, at least in West Des Moines, when those schools went into lockdown, parents were told, no, you may not come pick up your child. They have to remain here on the school campus.
Until we decide to let them go.
Exactly.
Yeah. And in the event of national emergencies, it may well come that kids are evacuated from a school and parents are not told where their children are until later.
Yeah, exactly. I think that is how the FEMA plan works at present. Remember, too, that we have RFID fences that are going up, stations at the northern and southern border. Even though Canada, the United States, and Mexico are going toward a one regional station, American Union, whatever you want to call it, even though we're headed for that, there's a fencing taking place, and I don't know if it's to keep them out or to keep us in.
That's an interesting point. That's an interesting point. $1.2 billion. It had originally been intended to build a border fence, but then at the last minute, Congress added some loopholes in, which basically says now this $1.2 billion can be spent on fencing or sensors or other infrastructure, whatever that might be. So I doubt we're going to see any of that $1.2 billion actually going to a physical barrier. But the point being, is it to keep people out or to keep us in? And if you're a Christian and you have studied end time prophecy at all, you know that this move toward centralizing power in the hands of one world government, and of course just establishing regional government is just the first step towards that one world government. It means a lot, because that's what we're headed back toward. You know, the world controlled by Nimrod in his day. He was the king of the one world government until God messed it up. And that's what the forces struggling over the globe are moving toward again today. They're trying to bring us toward regional governments and then to consolidate those regional governments into a global government, just as it was in the days of Nimrod. Well, I think we've expanded our time.
Oh, not again.
Yeah, boy, we get started and we could just run through an hour like nothing.
You know, I have to laugh at that because before we started tonight, you looked at us, at me, and you looked at us. You looked at me and you said, okay, so what are we going to talk about?
Yeah.
And I said, just start it rolling.
Just roll the tape, yeah.
You know, we never lack for something to say. And if the truth is, if we had a recording going all day long, we'd just have hours and hours and hours and hours for you to listen to because we have the same type of conversation all day long.
Yeah, we do. And it's frightening, isn't it?
Maybe we need a virtual life, honey.
That's it.
No, I love my life. I wouldn't change it for anything.
If you have any comments about what we've commented on today, send your comments to radio@peeringintodarkness.com.
Or if you have something specific you want to say just to me or just to Derek, you can send it to Sharon@peeringintodarkness.com or Derek@peeringintodarkness.com. Oh, what a surprise.
And if you want a funny thing to happen on the way to the forum, stop by there at peeringintodarkness.com/forum.
That's right. We're there all, well, at least a lot of the people are there. I'm not there very often. It often says I'm there because I don't ever log out. So if you go there and you see that I'm there, then just ignore that, because more than likely I'm off doing something else. Right now I'm reading something online. So I'm online a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm reading something online that we'll talk about at some future time, and that has to do all with Danny Casolaro.
Yeah, very interesting
there
stuff.
There are many dots, and that board is going to be so full of stuff. We have white walls here, and I think that they'd probably frown upon my writing on the wall, so I'll try really hard not to do that.
That's why they use the textured paint to discourage.
That and why they would charge us so much money.
That's right. Well, thanks again for being with us. And until next time, I'm Derek Gilbert.
I'm Sharon Gilbert. Bye-bye, everybody.